This is the Church Multiplication Collective Podcast, a podcast designed to help you multiply like never before.
Hey, hey, everybody. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you another 9-minute talk that was given at our Wesleyan pre-conference at Exponential East 2017. And I want to let you know about Exponential East 2018, which will be coming up soon, February 26th through March 1st. And you can find out all the information at wesleyan.org/exponential. We got some great discounts there if you're Wesleyan. So I'd love to see you there, and we can learn together as we pursue this mission of multiplication. So today I'm going to bring you a talk from Ken Nash, who is the pastor at First Wesleyan Church of Hamburg, and that's around Buffalo, New York. And his talk was entitled, Why Multi-Site Churches Are Wired to Reproduce Rapidly. Here it is. Go.
Ken Nash, where are you at? Come on up, brother. Ken Nash serves at the Hamburg Wesleyan Church. And his message today is titled, Why Multi-Site Churches Are Wired to Reproduce Rapidly. So have your way.
Thank you, Ed. Well, I have a confession to make. I believe, Dr. Wayne, I am the problem for why we haven't had a movement to this point. I am the reason we have to get together to talk about movements. And, well, maybe you too. Let me explain. Did you guys realize that education is for the purpose of actually preparing you and teaching you and training you? I used to think, you know, you kind of study for the purpose of learning, just to get the grades so then you can get the credentials and you can get your job and all that kind of thing. I was studying this one day and I read this article that forever changed me. Here it is. I was going to write this, but I'm a little bit nervous to even touch this. So you got to write this down, okay? In 1776, John Wesley had passed away, had been passed away. But at this point, when our country was founded, we had 65 congregations that were called Methodist. That was 2.5% of the population. In 1850, there were 13,305 churches known as Methodist. 70 years had gone by. This was just in the United States at this point. That was a population of 34.2% of the population. So in 70 years, we went from 2.5% of the population, one in every 50 people were considered Methodist, part of the Wesleyan movement. 34.2%, just 70 years later, we had literally one in every three people would consider to be Methodist. At that point, the movement started to die. There was a study done in Penn State by two sociologists. One you can look up named Roger Fink. He actually said, I want to know what happened to the movement. For us to go from 1 in 50, we're in the branch of the Wesleyan movement, right? To 1 in 3 people that were American considered themselves a part of us. From 1 in 50 to 1 in 3, what happened? Their research found, and they were looking at it not from an ecclesiological standpoint, but from a sociological standpoint. They found in 1850, the decision was made to move from being led by laity to professional clergy who thought they could do it better. That was a vote that was done. They weren't even looking at it from the standpoint of ecclesiology. They were just trying to figure out what happened to these people in the movement. From 1850 on, we've been declining in the Methodist movement. Thank the Lord in 1843, we were wise enough in the Wesleyans to branch off and kind of say, we're going to figure this out better. When I read that research, what I discovered was, I am a part of the problem. I am the reason the movement died as a clergy, because I was getting in the way. And so I made it my quest. I mean, it changed me as a leader. To that point, I had been a pastor for 15 years, and I repented before the Lord, and I said, God, help me get out of the way, because I'm the reason the movement is struggling so. And so I started meeting with laity. And as I started sitting down with them, I realized, you're smarter than me. You've got wisdom that I don't have. For example, one guy I met with was a city planner, and he said, do you realize that as a city planner, we are now realizing the millennials think so much differently than any generation before? We are starting to build cities and neighborhoods that have banks, residential, commercial, all together. Because in the future, they don't even really care to drive distances. They want to actually walk and do life in their community because they're lonely. And so they're changing their paradigm. And that started to change my paradigm. And I said, what if I get out of the way? Because I was mentored under the Rick Warren model of regional and bringing people in from all sorts of distance. And they'll drive. They've got a car. That's not the case in the future. And so I started changing my mindset, saying, what if we have to go to them? And so started thinking, well, what's the best way to do church planting? How do we start to reach them? And it started to become really clear to me, what if, again, I stick with this paradigm that I'm the problem and I get out of the way? And what if I take Ephesians 4 seriously and I start equipping them, and any of the apex spirit that is inside of me, I start to empower them and equip them to actually go and do this? And then I started realizing, as I was researching the best church planting strategies out there, when we used to do parachute drops, I was on a board where we do all sorts of parachute drops, and that percentage is 7%. Anita would be furious with those numbers. 7% is not attractive, right? And so we came up with a new model back several years ago to do the mother-daughter plant, where you adopt a church and then you send them off, give them some money, and then you have this great movement at that point, but that's only 40% success. Then I started hearing about this multi-site movement that was happening, which is a success rate, according to Jim Tumberlin, of 92%. And so I, at that point, again, said, what if I tap into that? What if now, instead of me expecting people to come to my church for the future, what if I go to them? And what if I go to them with lay people? So about 5 years ago, I went before my congregation in Grand Rapids, and I said, I repent. And I started to share with them that I long for your calling to come to pass. And I said, if any of you are interested, we would like to go 10 miles north into the downtown Grand Rapids area and would love to plant a church, but I want to plant it with you. We're not going to bring a hot shot in from somewhere around the country because you are the hot shots. And so we took 80 people, and I'm going to give you, at the break, I'll pass these out. We put together an academy where we started training them to think like church planters. And we went into the downtown Grand Rapids area with 80 people. Professionals and various types of lay people, housewives and mothers and fathers and co-workers of different relationships that people had with each other. And we went downtown Grand Rapids and we had started with 80 people. And instead of just taking one church planter who goes in and has to find a launch team and they go in there and this one person bears the weight, we actually were thinking, all of you 80 are church planters. And so we started with 300 people on the very first weekend. And this day, actually, just last week, I was told there were 450 people in that church downtown. And it was not led. It was actually led by a guy who worked in a Herman Miller furniture manufacturing shop. So we thought, what if we do the same thing again? And we moved over to the other side of southwestern side of Grand Rapids, and we said, congregation, what if some of you are called? 120 people came this time after looking what we did downtown. They're over 450 people on launch weekend, and it never dipped after that. Led actually by Wayne's nephew. How fantastic is that? He was working at Panera Bread. He didn't even know he had a call on his life, and he said, I really think I am called. Go figure. So now we've actually in New York, where I'm at right now with the Wesleyan Church of Hamburg, it's been fantastic. We looked at one of our campuses and we realized It's been really led by pastors. What if we got out of the way of, again, and we found a guy with passion and a calling, and he actually is a guy who works at, he's an engineer, works for Moog. It had 60 people in it. It was on life support. It's not been under 100 since we launched it back in December. I mean, God has a call on every life that follows him. So I'm the problem. And I'm challenging you to join me in getting out of the way. Because the stats prove it. I mean, the reason John Wesley said, don't turn this into a denomination, don't turn this into a church, don't turn it into a monument, is because he said, I know I'm prone to get in the way. And so he said, give me 100 people. I don't care if they're on, if they're laity or clergy, and I'll change the world if they're on fire for Christ. And so I've joined in with this worldview of saying, God, I just want to be a part of what you're doing. And he said, then will you get out of the way? Will you let me be me? Because every single Jesus follower in this world has a call on their life as significant as what you think yours is. And so join me in the movement of what's coming by getting out of the way and empowering, training, equipping. So I've put together an academy to train these people up and to equip them and to watch them come alive. We have benchmarks and we go through all the church planning strategies, but to treat laity as you treat a sacred church planter. And then you have a movement. Thank you.